Okay, reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 8, Text 14. Antastha sarva bhutanam atma yogeshvaro hari sumaya vrino garbham vairatya kuru tantave. Lord of Supreme Mysticism, Sri Krishna, resides within everyone's heart as Paramatma. As such, just to protect the progeny of the Kuru dynasty, he covered the embryo of Uttara by his personal energy. Purport, the Lord of Supreme Mysticism can simultaneously reside within everyone's heart or even with the atoms by his Paramatma feature, his plenary portion. Therefore, from within the body of Uttara, he covered the embryo to save Maharaj Parikshit and protect the progeny of Maharaj Kuru, of whom King Pandu was also a descendant. Both the sons of Dhritarashtra and those of Pandu belong to the same dynasty of Maharaj Kuru. Therefore, both of them are generally known as Kurus. When there were differences between the two families, the sons of Dhritarashtra were known as the Kurus, whereas the sons of Pandu were known as Pandavas. Since the sons and grandsons of Dhritarashtra were all killed in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, the last son of the dynasty is designated as the son of Kuru. Omagana Timurandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Daksur Mutam Yena Tasmai Si Gurave Namaha Vichaitanya Mano Bhistam Tapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Pancha kalpa turubhyascha Vipa shindu baye vacha Patitanam bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo namo nama Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasade Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So, my dear devotees, friends, greetings from Govardhan Hill on the Ekadasi before, you know, at the end of Kartik. And it's pretty amazing, you know. The hill just starts to fill up. It's like a river of devotion going around the hill with so many different groups doing kirtan. And under the hill, there seems to be some river of devotion. We're commenting, some of us who are walking around regularly, we were kind of commenting that when you walk around, you know, it's almost that there's something that comes up through the ground, through your souls and into your heart. It's very nice. And you know, one thing that was disturbing, you know, as more and more people come, people serve prasadam, and they, you know, I don't know, they throw the plates and ashrams get built up and the sewage comes out across onto Govardhan. But, you know, I really had an enlivening meeting with a friend of mine. He's an ISKCON devotee that's living out at Govardhan for 15, 20 years, named Devaki Pran. And he actually, you know, he's a loyal ISKCON devotee, but, you know, he's kind of a a Babaji. You know, beard and just simple cloth. And he was going around the hill twice every day for so many years, as three times on Janmashtami. And he just became inspired because he comes from a political family. I believe his uncle was a major politician or whatever. You know, to just use his skills to get Govardhan cleaned up. It's amazing. When you go around the hill, it's actually very, very clean now. Because I was speaking to him yesterday. He made some arrangement with the government or something. They're giving him some budget of 8 lakhs. I don't know, something. That they have 40 people that go around the hill with straw brooms, just, you know, just constantly cleaning it. So that's nice. And they're reforesting Govardhan, planting so many trees, and he's doing that. And just other things to, you know, solve the monkey problem and other things. And I'm going to see if I can help him out, because it's very, very inspiring, because it's such a source of inspiration for the world, what to speak of North India, that God appears in a sacred mountain to give you mercy. One great saint, remember Govardhan Puja, I was speaking to him, old, old man, I think he must be 90 now, saying that God has appeared in two manifestations as his devotee, to give mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Govardhan Hill. And it's so nice, too. There's little communities around the hill. I live in one. I call it the Lower East Side. It's kind of near the ISKCON place. I have a little Kishori Radha and Tom were here. They never saw my place. They said, wow. It's all cow dung walls, and it's just kind of and Jai Shri Radhe brought 30 Israelis that went around Govardhan Hill today, and it's just wonderful to see the so it's like a community. And then there's something, Shamdas called it like Aspen, Colorado. There's actually a resort area where many, many devotees live now. It's very, very beautiful. Probably there's beautiful cottages with gardens and stone paths, and the Krishna section and the Jamuna section and the Ganga section. And there's even little golf carts to people. But anyway, it's just a beautiful spiritual community. And in my house, my place, people come in the evening, and I do what I love to do. We discuss Hari Katha. It's just beautiful devotional life. And one person who, he's some businessman, but not a business, he's a real Vaishnav. You know, he came to me, and he showed me, just he made these beautiful pictures of all the different sadhus around Braj. And, you know, they're old, but the peace in their consciousness and how simple they live and how satisfied they are with their consciousness. They don't have things, but they have consciousness. And then he was telling me, and they sent prasadam over from the place, just about, or maybe about 400 or 500 yards down the road. There's someone that lives on the Prikram path, and for the last 15, 20 years, he just cooks rotis for sadhus and lives by the side of Govardhan. I showed me his picture, and his name is Roti. Roti is for chapatis. Roti Baba. And, you know, just to see kind of, you know, the proof that consciousness is happiness. And this is something that I've been really harping on, and even meditating, because, you know, I'm doing an Amrit, and I wake up at 1 o'clock, and I begin to chant at least by 1:30, 2 o'clock, and I'm chanting because when you chant a lot, it's somehow some kind of taste comes. At least I'm not bored, and I'm just saying the same syllables again and again and again and again, and I'm trying to find out why I'm not bored, because generally excitement means that things change around me, but nothing's changing around me. Externally, from a material standpoint, I'm just sitting in one chair, you know, at mud walls, and I'm just repeating these syllables, but yet I'm completely satisfied. And it's a confirmation, and a confirmation of seeing all these sadhus who have so little and care for so little. Yet you see how blissful they are. And even what they have, they want to give you. Really. If they collected some food for themselves to eat, they want to give that to you. There's no connection that the world will make me happy. Love will make me happy in connection with the supreme object of love, which is Govardhan or Krishna. But anyway, it's just a lot of nice realizations, and I think this is always the best month for me, and I'll pray to Guru Govardhan that, you know, I just may just do this the whole year, even when I'm other places. Now, so today's verse, well, as we know what happened, we're following somehow. It's about Maharaj Prickett, but because they wanted to hear his birth and his life and his activities, and the devotee, his identity is in relationship with Krishna. Who we are is in relationship to Krishna. So when you deny God, you deny yourself. If you deny God, you can't have a real identity. You can only have a false or imposed identity. Because what we are is in relationship to God. When we're talking about Maharaj Prickett, we're talking about Krishna. In fact, I think at the beginning of the seventh chapter, he says, now I will tell you about Krishna, but it's about Maharaj Prickett, because what a devotee is, you can't separate him from God. You can't separate it. You talk about a devotee, you're talking about a God, because what a devotee is someone who serves God and worships God and loves God. So, you know, we begin from Maharaj Prickett's first contact with Krishna, which was in the womb, because as we're finding out here, Ashvatthama, the son of Dronacharya, who had killed the five sleeping sons of Draupadi, and therefore, as a judicious punishment to the son of one's guru, who has done a heinous crime, honoring somehow one's guru by giving special consideration to his son, but at the same time honoring the principles of judiciousness, they humiliate him by cutting off his hair. And now he takes revenge by releasing a brahmasta, an atomic mantra-guided bomb, smart bomb, directed at the womb of Uttara, the mother of Marge Prickett. So now Krishna, who is Yogeshwara, covers the embryo, which is Marge Prickett, by his Swamaya Avano. He's covered by his personal energy. And Grandpa Maharaj Prickett has this impression of Krishna in the womb. Impressions can be made in the womb. For sure. And impressions are attachments or aversions that remain embedded in the consciousness, seeking to either fulfill embedded in the consciousness that seek to be fulfilled, either by acquiring or associating with the object that gave it happiness, or averting oneself or avoiding the objects that gave one displeasure. But the object in the womb that gave him pleasure is the direct connection with Krishna. And that's what pleasure is, because that is our connection with love. That is the connection with our identity. That is the connection with our heart. That's why when Krishna comes into Vrindavan, Vrindavan becomes exceedingly auspicious. Because anything in direct connection with the personality of Godhead, the manifestation of God's love and relationship, that love within the heart is invoked. And love is pleasure, and it's God's pleasure. And what can be greater than the happiness of God, which we can share? If there is a God, what does his happiness feel like? It's called prema, and we can also feel it. If there is God, what is his happiness? How overwhelmingly sublime must it be? And it's the real happiness. And that becomes invoked in relationship to God in love. God imbues us with the thing that gives him pleasure, which is love of himself, which is his own energy, so that he can exchange with that energy in terms of a relationship with the person whom that love is flowing from. Prema Pumartha Mahan, what else can be the goal of life? And that comes in connection with Krishna. Like a magnet, there's a force. So in the soul comes in contact with God directly by a desire to have that relationship. God is everywhere. You can't avoid him. You can only avoid him by consciousness. which is, I don't want God, I don't want to be his devotee. And then God's illusory potency comes to cover himself from you and cover yourself from him. But when you turn towards God, when you worship God, when you want to serve God, and therefore you surrender to the will of God, you seek God's pleasure by seeking his desire, which comes in the heart of the devotees in disciplic succession, then one becomes enlivened. Evam prasanna manaso, all the senses become enlivened with overwhelming love. So that happened to Maharaj Prickett in the womb. And therefore, we mentioned many times, his name is Friction. He's the examiner. He's searching for the source that created the pleasurable feeling of love in his heart that imbued his consciousness with attachment or impressions to experience that again. And then, of course, Krishna here is called Yogeshwara. He's the master of all mystics. So his will is that his determination is an absolute fact. And he manifests that determination as he wants. So now he wants to protect the child, and he does it in terms of his desire to enjoy Leela by manifesting from within the womb. When there's God, then there is mysticism. There is something beyond the laws of nature that can circumvent the laws of nature. And that's God. And one aspect of God that can circumvent the laws of nature is God's kripa, or his mercy. He can benedict you way beyond and empower you way beyond your capabilities within the laws of nature. That's the essence of the whole process of bhakti, which is the path of grace. The dhammi buddhi yogam tvam yena mam upayanti te. Tesham satadiyaktanam bhajata. The one who worships me with faith and devotion, I give them the knowledge by which they can come back to me. So bhakti is the path of grace. You serve God, and you endeavor to advance spiritually, but you achieve far beyond your own endeavor. That's the principle of Krishna consciousness. That God is incalculably and infinitely of value. And our ability to earn it is very limited. But we can, by grace, which reduces the distance between the value of something we want to achieve and how much we can attain by our effort. There's such a distance But there's mercy, and mercy descends in the form of love. Really, there's no other mercy, because there's no other real happiness. Divine love. And when that divine love descends, we can't put a price on it. Because we're trying to get things for pleasure and happiness. But the divine love far exceeds the pleasure and happiness of anything else we can experience. And happiness is the goal. So that's the process of bhakti. And we're actually witnessing it as very, very senior. I mentioned this last week, I believe. Let me just check out one thing here. Yeah. I spoke about it last week. I just wanted to. That the attainments of devotees for the simple spiritual achievement of surrendering to the will of Guru, Prabhupada, in the mood of doing whatever you want. Even if I'm incapable of doing it, I'm surrendering to the effort to do so. And the reciprocation is phenomenal. When someone just has that in their hearts, what they can achieve spiritually is phenomenal. So anyway, Krishna now manifests within the heart, and we'll go on. Yadyapashtam brahmashiras tvamogam chapritikriyam Vaishnavam teja ashadya samasamyad vigudravaha. O Shonaka, although the supreme Brahmastra weapon released by Ashvatthama was irresistible and without check or counteraction, it was neutralized and foiled when confronted by the strength of Vishnu, Lord Krishna. Purport, in the Bhagavad Gita it is said that the Brahma Jyoti, or the glowing transcendental effulgence, is resting in Lord Sri Krishna. In other words, the glowing effulgence known as Brahma Tejas is nothing but the rays of the Lord, just as the sun rays are rays of the sun disk. So this Brahma weapon also, although materially irresistible, could not surpass the supreme strength of the Lord. The weapon called Brahmastra, released by Ashvatthama, was neutralized and foiled by Lord Krishna by his own energy, that is to say. He did not wait for any other help because he is absolute. So again, from the standpoint of material laws, there's nothing that can counteract the Brahmastra weapon, the supreme weapon of destruction. There's no way to stop it once it's been released. Just like if there's an atomic bomb and an atomic explosion, then calculably, there's no way to stop it within the laws of material nature. Once it's released, there's no way to check it. You can't throw water on it. You can't. What can you do? But here it is counteracted when it's confronted with the Tejasadya, with the strength of Vaishnavim, the strength in relationship to Vishnu. O Brahmanas, do not think, 16, this to be especially wonderful in the activities of the mysterious and infallible personality of Godhead. By his own transcendental energy, he maintains and annihilates all material things, although he is unborn. So now Sukadeva Goswami is addressing the audience. If you believe in God, this is not unbelievable. Because when you believe in God, you believe in the Supreme Controller, which is not subject to anything, even time. He's not subject to anything. Nothing rules God. God is Swarat. In the first verse of the Bhagavatam, it says, Jadmadyasa Yaton Vayat Itratas Chartesh Chartesh Dibya Surat. He's Surat. He's the king. He rules. He's independent. There's no one other that rules above him. He's creating all the universes. He's maintaining all the universes. He'll destroy all the universes. So he's saying to the Brahmins, don't be surprised by these minor miracles of God. I remember there's a god sister of mine named Samapriya, and we actually grew up in the same neighborhood. She was 1 year in school ahead of me, and her brother used to be my friend. And then later we found out that, you know, we had this kind of connection. So her mother, who somehow went back to school and got a PhD in psychology, came to Vrindavan and came to Parikram. And I remember when we got to Govardhan, this older Jewish lady began to dance by Govardhan. And then after the stories were told, I think the question was asked, you know, do you believe this? She said, well, her answer was, if Krishna is God, then why can't he lift a hill? So here's the same question is going. This is God. So what's the question of trying to figure out how he can do anything? By definition, he can do anything. Thus, save from the radiation of the Brahmastra Kunti, the chaste devotee of the Lord and her five sons and Draupadi addressed Lord Krishna as he started for home. Kunti is described herein as sati, or chaste, due to her unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna. Unalloyed devotion to Lord Krishna is not unalloyed devotion to something sectarian. Unalloyed devotion to Krishna is unalloyed devotion to the absolute ultimate reality that's inclusive of everything. And our constitutional position is to be chaste. It's just like the hand, it is part of the body. And its glory is when it is chaste to the body. It is, because it's one unit. But the idea, the analogy would be separate units that have volition. If the hand had separate volition, chastity is so beautiful. Chastity to what? To being a hand and serving the body. It's natural. So here when they say, Sati was chaste, it's not a limited focus of dependence. It's an absolute dependence, or dependence on the absolute. Her mind will now be expressed in the following prayers. A chaste devotee of the Lord does not look to others, namely, any other living being or demigod, even for deliverance from danger. That was all along the characteristic of the Pandavas. They knew nothing except Krishna, and therefore the Lord was always ready to help them in all respects and in all circumstances. This is the transcendental nature of the Lord. He reciprocates the dependence of the devotee. This is the transcendental nature. This nature is not dependent on the modes of nature. It's dependent on the will of God. It's dependent on the heart of God. And as that absolute reality is personal, he naturally reciprocates in relationship. And those that are fully dependent on God, fully dependent on God, he gives shelter. And when you have that full dependence, God protects you. I spoke to, actually it was Lila Velasini, some of you know her. And she's quite a dynamic, powerful lady. But, you know, she also comes from, Kazakhstan, that Asian-type culture, a little bit Muslim-influenced, a little bit, you know, a little traditional in some ways, although she's very dynamic. And, you know, her view is that if an unmarried lady wants to have a Krishna-conscious husband, they should just depend on Krishna and not shop themselves. Anyway, her realization was nice, her own experience too. First of all, Krishna does reciprocate when you fully depend on him, and I've seen that. I've seen that when girls have come, and mostly always, and they've, you know, fully surrender and take shelter, then somehow a husband comes. And she also says that she noticed that when she adopted that type of mood, how much more attractive one becomes also. But as Prabhupada said, God doesn't have the defect of impersonality, and he reciprocates. And that's natural, and I explained this many, many times. If someone doesn't reciprocate in love, they're not a very good person, what to speak about being a supreme person. And many of us have had relationships where they weren't reciprocated, where we did depend on someone, where we did give our heart, and people did not reciprocate. They weren't affected by our love, and we don't appreciate it. So in the same sense, it's mentioned that why should we project on God impersonalism as something higher than personalism. Impersonalism, that he does not reciprocate. We can imagine a very powerful person, and people may give him everything, but they don't give their hearts. Or they give him everything, but he's not affected. He's not moved by love. One should not there look for help from imperfect living beings or demigods, but one should look for all help from Lord Krishna, who is competent to save his devotees. Such a devotee never asks the Lord for help, but the Lord, out of his own accord, is always anxious to render it. That's what faith in God means, that he will do what's best for us. And especially for those who take full shelter. And that's really what the real initiation is. It's not just a formality. It's giving ourselves to the will of God as expressed through his representative. And confident that within that relationship, I am sheltered. And that's the beginning of spiritual life. It's called Sharanagata, where we go for shelter, sometimes translated as surrender. We have full confidence that what's best is to do things that are favorable for the service of God, that what's best is to avoid things that are unfavorable. We have full confidence that in this relationship, I am maintained and protected. And especially what's maintained and protected is my consciousness, because I'm in relationship with the supreme object of love. And therefore, the nature of my soul to love and to be fulfilled in love will be protected in this relationship. And because I'm dealing with God, I am happy in the humble position. And that's the main feature of devotion, that you are happy to be connected with something greater that has authority and jurisdiction over your life, which is God. That there's an absolute truth that is the authority for my life over my needs and desires, in the sense that we value truth over our needs and desires. What is right is more important than what I want. And it's not that what I want can't be right, but what makes it right is not that I want it, but that there's a truth to it. And when one actually experiences that, experiences God's protection, God's maintenance, God's shelter, especially in relationship to the heart, then we never ask God for anything because he's already protecting us and giving us shelter. We don't have to ask for it. He's already doing it. Okay, I'm going to stop here because I can't go too late because it gets late at night here, but nice to be with you all. Anybody like to ask a question? A few people would like to say hello.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Hi, Bo Gail.
Yeah, I have a couple of questions, actually. Can you hear me well?
Okay. Yeah.
At least for now, because I am on the train, so I'll try to make it quick. when you said that, you know, to trust in an authority, you know, beyond our needs and desires, I got kind of stuck when you said needs, because of course, your authority would want your needs. What would supersede your needs? Needs seem like something that you do need to get fulfilled. I can't understand desires
and
limbs.
Okay, listen. Then I'll edit it so that the point is clear. What I'm saying is we may want something, but higher than what we want is what is right. You know, it higher than what we want is what is right, and some of what we want is right, but it's not right because we want it. It's right because there's a truth to it.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond what we want. That's what I mean. So I can understand how the word needs may be a little bit confusing. But But in a sense, I was thinking that sometimes even our needs may not be met. And that's also right. Because sometimes people find themselves in a situation of want, but that's also God's will. You know, so, you know, needs is also like a relative term. What do we need? You know, what determines what we need? So sometimes what we need on one level is not what we actually need on a higher level. Like we need our good health, but sometimes we're sick. Do we need sickness? No. We need health, but sometimes we're sick. And that's God's will. And that's higher than our needs. That's what I meant.
Okay.
But of course, you could take the term need, of course, what we ultimately need, not just superficially need. That's
right,
what
okay.
I meant.
Okay.
Anything else, Gail?
Yes. Then somebody is in like legitimate need. Yeah, like you said. You know, I agree with you. You know, there's higher needs and so on. So,
yeah.
How what's the proper way to pray for somebody who is like in who is, for example, having really bad health or something? You know, we're legitimate
right.
needs.
Right. No, I know that. When Prabhupada got ill, we asked if we could pray for him, and he said yes. And the way we prayed, if you so desire, Krishna, please cure Prabhupada.
So he would do that anyway. So what's the point?
What's that?
He would do what he wants anyway. So what would be the point of praying?
I guess in one sense we don't have to do anything, right? But also God's a person, so he's going to respond to... It's a sense that God responds also. He responds to prayers. He responds to love. He reciprocates. And, you know, if you want to bring it to the ultimate platform, I guess God knows everything. But there's a certain realm where he allows us to reciprocate with him. And there's a certain realm where he does reciprocate with our prayers. So in one sense, I don't know if you could say that prayers, the question would be, can prayers supersede destiny? But when you get into the law of karma and what is, you know, what can be done and what is God's will and what, you know, it does get a little sticky. But I would say that God does give us that leeway, you know, that he does respond to our desires out of love and our prayers out of love, and he can respond to them. And
I know he's responsive, but if he is already determined to do what is best for every soul, then how would his response to our prayers change his behavior? He's already doing what's best for everybody at every moment.
I can't hear you, Chris. Are you on the train? I think I can hear you, but I'm not sure I heard all of it. Let me see if I can.
I said
paraphrase. I can't hear you, so let me just talk. Let me see if I can paraphrase your question if I understand it. So what you're saying is, God has already determined everything, so what is the use of prayer?
No. He's already determined to do what is best for everybody.
Right,
He's
so what is the use of prayer? What
right,
is the use
right.
of asking God for anything?
Right.
What is the use of... And I think you can't limit God. I think he can do both. I think that God can... You know, have an ultimate view of everything, and I think he can allow us to, I think he can allow us at the same time to influence him and supersede certain situations. But ultimately, we're just the instrument for his will anyway. So I guess if you want to look at things beyond the heart, you can actually be detached and kind of unaffected and very gnanic. And, you know, say that I guess at best God is just allowing us to be an instrument. But I just think it limits God. I think he does allow us some type of interchange and some type of response to prayer. You know, maybe he knows it beforehand, but still somehow or other. It's just like in the Bhagavad Gita, you know, he said, I already killed everyone, but you can be the instrument. So there's a sense that we're the instrument. There's also a sense that we actually are the instrument. And he's allowing us to actually change destiny and change will. And that ultimately do something that is best. So maybe everything is all Leela. And that's what we described and also in Jiva Dharma. You get to the point of why even the jivas are here and why we're suffering, etc. And it says that God is Leela Maya. He's full of all pastimes, including the pastime of mercy in this world. So he allows us to exchange. Okay, Gail, it's getting late. I have to go on. We can discuss this later. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Jai, Hare Bo. Thank you again.
Hare Bo, I'm really
glad
you talked.
I know that you're always on there. Yeah.
We love it.
I have so much. Thank you. I have so much confidence that when I get on, at least I know that you two are there and a few others.
Thank
Anybody
you,
else
Maharaj.
Like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Anybody
please
else like
my
to
humble business? Hare Krishna
Maharaj.
Thank you. My humble. Thank you, Rick.
Anybody else say hello? Okay. Anyway, for today, that's enough. All right, because it's late and I have to go. Hare Krishna.